Hey guys, thank you for listening to the Zach Scriven Podcast. The Zach Scriven Podcast is sponsored by Anchor. Anchor is the easiest way to make a podcast. It gives you everything you need right in one place for free to publish your podcast across Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all the podcasting place. You can record, edit, and even add sponsorships and earn money from your podcast. Really easy to get started. Go to anchor.fm or download the Anchor app to get started. And thank you, Anchor, for sponsoring the Zach Scriven Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Industry 4.0 is the migration of older concepts and technology moving over to a streamlined application and software and hardware set to digitize a lot of data transfer and how it communicates with between the field or hardware pieces and their environment that they're being hosted in. That's my interpretation of it. There's quite a few.
Rich, what's up, man?
Living the dream.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's always awesome.
Yeah.
That makes two of us.
Yeah.
So tell me, what is CSE Icon?
CSE Icon is an integration company. We primarily focus in on big data, automation, SCADA, and spanning in automation industries, primarily in oil and gas, and we've been breaking into manufacturing recently, too.
Awesome. So what do you do at CSE Icon?
I'm the Technology and Innovations Manager, so I assist in overseeing multi-departmental projects. I run the IT team for the company. I work on policies and procedures for streamlining our operations, and I administrate a lot of that.
Awesome. And you're also a LinkedIn influencer now?
Yeah.
Starting to break into it?
Maybe a little bit.
I saw a video go out there the other day.
Maybe. Possibly.
Awesome. Yeah, that's one of my things is just trying to democratize, to use these Industry 4.0 concepts,
yeah.
Democratize video content, being a video influencer to like your everyday person.
Right.
How can someone who has a job, like I don't have a job, but how can someone who, you know, works at a company, maybe they're in sales, maybe they're in engineering, how can they use video to not only build their own brand, but also help build the brand of the company that they're part of? Because, you know, I think everyone wants to work at a company that's going to be successful not only today but in tomorrow.
Right. Well, I think the starting factor would be is if you're going to try to entertain people and get content online that's actually being pursued and actively watched, is you have to have something that is going to grab attention. Because anybody can pop on and spout off information about what they've learned and what knowledge they have. But if you don't provide some form of entertainment or some form of commentary that people can either sympathize with or empathize with, then you don't have any way to connect with your audience or who you're
trying to connect to. Like a perspective or a point of view.
It's very similar to sales. You reach out to see what kind of perspectives you share with someone so that you become an insider with them, and rather than just being on the opposite side of the table. For instance, yeah, with what I've been doing on LinkedIn is just posting up like management books I've read and providing some information on that, some of the conferences I've talked at, just to try to get some traction there, some notice for our company as well as myself in my career.
How's that gone so far?
Oh, it's been great. I mean, I really enjoy it. I really enjoy the community. Now, the thing is about the automation industry is it's such a small niche industry. Everybody knows everybody. You know, I bump into some guy who I worked with, you know, and he knows some guy that he worked with and noticed me at a plant in Wyoming, you know, nine years ago and stuff like that.
Very cool.
And so it's just, it's really cool that way. Alternatively, because it is such a small industry, there is a lot of competition, and it limits down how much people are going to be public about their information and their goals and their tasks and what kind of developments they make. You know, in the open source platform world, when someone says Eureka and finds something groundbreaking, it gets shared.
Right.
And when in this kind of industry, that tends to be a selling point, so it doesn't get shared as much.
Yeah.
I think there's somewhere in the middle that's probably a happy medium.
Yeah.
And that's why I like that you guys have those open source initiatives and are contributing to that open source community. You're doing the podcast, you're sponsoring the road trip.
Right.
So I think that that alone just kind of signals that you guys are trying to build a community larger than just CSE Icon, the Empire.
Certainly. Strikes back. I mean, we have a lot of notice around, and that's always been great. But to expand on the industry and achieve what the Industry 4.0 goals are, which is to upgrade their hardware, software to these digitalized revolutions, people need to start working together more and sharing information more, and developing their own kind of communication there. And if we can play a small part of that, that would be great.
Yeah, I think video is one of those avenues, and podcasts.
Yeah.
And that's why it's really cool. Like Justin Dean is all over LinkedIn, and he started his own podcast recently.
Yeah. Him and Sean Terrell.
Yeah, Sean is another good guy. I mean, you guys have like these massive beards, and it's kind of making me feel a little... like,
mine's terrible. It's just going two ways. It's like the carrot top of beards,
Well, I mean, before you said anything, it looks like you just kind of had that style going, but that was my thing. It's like I had these little patches that wouldn't quite grow in the same.
Right.
And so I kind of always felt insecure about it, but I was like, you know what? Let me just be me, and my beard is what it is. And
I did the suit and tie thing for years and years and years and years.
Yeah.
And because I've been in this industry about 13 years now, and I just got tired of it, and I just try to stick to my blue jeans and flannel. I think it's
I work much better. I don't know about you, but I work much better when I'm comfortable.
Yeah.
You know? Not trying to pretend I'm someone I'm not,
Right. I mean, there's times and places for slacks and and all of that, especially if you're going downtown and that kind of thing. I mean, that's what they reflect with better, and it's more professional, and it's a better environment for it. But if I'm just sitting in my office and doing some programming or whatever, I prefer to just be relaxed.
Shorts and tea.
Yeah.
So, what is Industry 4.0?
Well, I mentioned a little bit of it earlier. Industry 4.0 is the migration of older concepts and technology moving over to a streamlined application and software and hardware set to digitize a lot of data transfer and how it communicates with between the field or hardware pieces and their environment that they're being hosted in.
Yeah.
That's my interpretation of it. There's quite a few.
It's so complicated, though.
I know.
Like, it's is there a 5-year-old explanation of what is an Industry 4.0?
It's like asking, what's SCADA? You know what I mean? What's SCADA to you? What's SCADA to me? It's everybody has their own little facet of SCADA, and it's the same way with industry.
Let's start there. So SCADA to me is a screen. It could be my phone.
Mm-hmm.
I can turn on and off a pump. I think, one of your other engineers was saying, like, that's essentially what we do. It's like we make a screen that can turn on and off a piece of equipment in the real world, right?
Right.
It's connecting that real world to that digital world.
Right.
I think Industry 4.0 is kind of like that next evolution of it.
Yeah.
Implementing other technologies like VR, AR, machine learning, AI,
right,
which we've said a million times.
Yeah.
Just today. Horizontal integration, vertical integration,
right.
Additive manufacturing, like machine 3D printing.
Yeah.
What else? I think it's also just a people change, a cultural change, a mindset change.
Possibly.
What do you think about the culture here at CSE Icon? What are your guys's, what's the environment like?
The reality of it is in that automation industry and how it rolls is they will maintain what they've got, because if it ain't broke, why fix it?
Mm-hmm.
So we pursue a lot of these items, a lot of these MQTT modules and advanced modules, ML, machine learning and augmented reality and virtual reality and these kind of endeavors. But the investment of time is not necessarily there when I have someone over here telling me, hey, I need a Modbus address read in. You know what I mean? It's just not there.
Right.
You know?
You're like speaking two different languages. Right.
So I mean, the prioritization of training migrates towards legacy application base knowledge first, and secondarily, as a staff, we promote learning these outside technologies because they will be utilized in time. But the majority of applications in automation and the industry today are for, you know, these legacy systems, which is what we found. There's been certain cases where the newer technology gets pursued. That's just industry specific to which facet of automation you're pursuing.
Okay, so give us an example of one of those industries.
So, for example, like if you're doing a manufacturing center and they're installing a brand new conveyor system, right? And they've got a brand new Allen Bradley. Allen Bradley's they have a prototype going for MQTT, but they don't have native MQTT support yet. Okay. How many times do you think Arlen never says MQTT, like, a year?
Probably 1,000 at least.
He says that during one conference, right?
Yeah.
Do you think he ever just gets tired of it? Anyway, back to the point.
Wait, so Allen Bradley, but they're not developing Sparkplug, or are they also now joining that community?
I don't know. Okay. I couldn't say yes or no.
They have the module that does MQTT. It's external.
Right. Well, they're working on a prototype, so it's not. And this is like all, you know, through the grapevine kind of stuff.
Right.
It's nothing, you know, for sure. They're not marketing it or anything yet. So
yeah.
So that, you know, they want to move that and do the ladder logic behind the Allen Bradley PLC configuration and how all of that gets lined up. And if you've never done PLC programming before, a lot of it's copy paste revise. That's just how it rolls, because a lot of those sensors and a lot of how it all connects and interconnects, it's all pre-programmed, it's all pre-packaged, you know. It's like the Stack Overflow of PLC programming.
Yeah.
In the circumstance of transmitting to MQTT, when you're on a location and you want millisecond data, MQTT is great for that because of small packet sizes and you have high speed transmission, so you can get excessively overwhelming amounts of data. And there's different links for that and how you can get it connected with HMIs or different types of packages there. So those kind of circumstances, it would make absolute sense. Now, I got a flow meter that's 12 years old, every winter gets frozen up in Canada. Why the hell would I upgrade it? Mm-hmm. I'm just not gonna, you know?
Interesting. So why don't we talk a little bit more about what it's like to actually, you know, work here, some of the guys and girls. Like, what is you guys do Christmas party, or do you guys have any traditions? Or, wanted to work at CSE Icon, like, what type of person would I be, you know?
So if you've watched CSE Icon over the last, I've been here for 5 years now, about 5.5 years actually. I started in as a senior integrator, came in after a few previous integration companies. You got to be slightly crazy to be an integrator for a long time, just because a lot of people can't handle the stress and the anxiety of being an integrator and the different kind of challenges. I personally love it because I've always loved math and I love solving problems, and I just look out for the next one. I did the senior integration thing for a while. Then I got moved up to SCADA practice lead about 2.5 years ago.
Okay.
And I started managing ignition projects. And there was a little bit of company change around during that period. After the company change around, there was a period where I was pursuing ignition projects and expanding into that, and it started to really bloom, and I started to grow the practice a lot more, and I got moved up to manager of the SCADA practice overall. When I started getting into a more social position, I wanted to make some changes
to the culture
of the company, because integration companies are notoriously
dry,
external from their employees.
They're always traveling.
You're on site with a client. You're on site with on site for a plant. You know, you rarely interact with your company.
You're kind of like a lone wolf,
right? And some people like that, some people don't. I personally liked it, but some people you could tell they just didn't feel like they were part of the company. They wouldn't show up to the Christmas party because they have no motivation to show up to the Christmas party, you know, and no reason, you know. And I tried to start migrating that. And there's been other people like Ben Vu who has also made an effort to incorporate that. He suggested quarterly dinners for all of our staff that are working locally and remotely. For instance, in Houston alone, we have about 50 people.
Okay.
But most of them work scattered around the city in different customer sites.
Okay. So they're not in the office every day?
Right. Right. Or very rarely in the office at all.
Okay.
Right. So we have quarterly dinners, and that's been really increasing a lot of our socializing in the company. Personally, I like to bring out the staff about when I'm in town, about every other Thursday for happy hour, and we just go and have drinks, and we're just not allowed to talk about work and just catch up with each other.
I can't tell if that's like awesome or like terrible, because I would just want to talk about work, you know.
yeah, and it usually, like, you know, it's the, you know, you can't talk about work kind of thing, but ultimately what it comes down to is that people do
have,
and they
life.
Just vent about it, and then they just, you know, move conversation over into getting to know each other a lot more. And that's what's important, is getting to know each other, because I mean we spend the most of our lives at work, you know. Why you should make an effort to
make it personal,
get to know. You know, I mean, I understand, you know, when you're a boss, people are always going to see you as their boss, but you can at least like try to be friends to an extent, you know, try to be an acquaintance, try to let them know, you know, if you are having personal problems, just come talk to me. Don't shadow me or, you know, disappear, ghost, you know.
Yeah.
That's important, and I don't care what industry you're in. It's just extremely important. And
communication,
especially in these days of age, where you got like so many different types of communication that you can pursue: texting, email, phone calls, video calls. You know, whatever is needed. So,
I think also that's where, you know, engaging your employees to be active on LinkedIn. Especially, or just social media in general, is you can kind of develop that relationship without ever, you know, physically being in the same office.
Right.
Just like how you and I know each other before we ever met in person.
Yeah.
You know, I think that has a power to kind of bring that, you know, company together. You can comment, you know, I'm sure you've seen some of your employees, like, you can see the analytics, like, you know, 10 people from CSE Icon have seen this video. And
Yeah.
So I think that's also pretty cool. But I think there's still that importance for like that in-person meetup. And
yeah, I think there's a strong difference between social media and personal discussion face-to-face. And
let's,
I think,
talk about those.
That needs to be like completely separate, because your interpretation of someone can be completely skewed by their history and how they posted and how they've shared content,
which is completely selected by them.
Right, and their prioritization of your personality is dependent on your history.
Say that again.
Their prioritization of your personality is dependent on what you've posted in the past.
Right.
You make a small comment about something that affects them, and it explodes to them, and they think, the next time I see this guy, he's going to instantly talk about this thing that I dislike.
Right.
And therefore,
but that may not even been.
That's right. It's a blip of thought for you, but it's completely huge for them.
You know? Could still have that scenario happen in real life, though, too, right?
Absolutely, like, can, but people are less...
You're getting more body language.
They're less reactive face-to-face. And they will
look for elaboration. You're not behind that keyboard.
That's right, because they have time to think about it. They have time to type it back. They have time to delete that statement. They have time to stew. Whereas when you're face-to-face talking to someone, that's where you were like, but did you mean it this way? And then it can be elaborated on. Because for the most part, people are reasonable.
Yeah.
And, you know,
interesting.
As who they are. But you gotta stick to generalizations online. That's just my philosophy. I'd prefer to be underwhelming online and then meet people in person, because that way I can just talk to them and get to know them face to face. That's my preference.
It'll be interesting to see as social media and real life, those lines continue to get more blurred. You know.
Yeah.
Like you said, I think they are different, but at some point, you may not, you know, be able to you know, like for example, virtual reality.
Yeah.
It could come pretty close within our lifetime of being indistinguishable, in which case, you know, is that, you know, and there's haptic feedback and
yeah.
You're like, you know, we could be in a virtual reality world right now just having this conversation and get right. largely the same experience.
Yeah,
it'd be like, it's kind of scary, but it's also like interesting too.
Well, I mean, we're leagues away from that, right? Like all our facial expressions and body expressions and our culture that applies to it and different ways of lifestyle completely change our interpretation of talking to someone face to face, you know.
How is it meeting me face to face after following me online?
You know, I was expecting sunglasses.
Oh, threw you off there, huh? Okay.
No, I'm just joking around. No, it's been fine. I mean, I'm pretty relaxed about meeting people. I meet a lot of people a lot of times, so I don't try to put any weight behind things like that. So it's,
yeah, I try to pretend that no one knows me, you know, because mm-hmm. I don't. Yeah.
You don't show yourself online.
Yeah.
You are sticking to generalizations because you're a media.
Yeah.
A person that way. So it makes sense.
Well, I do actually show myself online. Mm-hmm. I do. Generalizations. What do you mean by that?
Well, you try to make blanket statements so you don't offend people, right?
Mm.
Or you try to stick to popular culture to an extent.
Not so much. I mean,
no.
Some of the more polarizing subjects, you know, maybe I don't maybe make us like a draw a lot of attention to it, but like right. for example, and some of the times in the comments, I'll put out my, you know, kind of unfiltered opinions. Yeah. Like for example, the other day we were in Detroit, and the UAW union workers were like striking, and I put a post out that, you know, just said I felt like these. It's kind of I think it's like a little bit of wasted effort, you know, like, and I guess this kind of gets a little bit political, but no, like, you know, like to think that we in this day and age have people that are just sitting outside holding signs and not really doing anything to drive society forward, to me kind of got me mad. And so I posted that. So that doesn't, you know, that's kind of more of a specific, like, that's how I feel. Right. So, yeah, I do a fair amount of putting I try to like make it actually indistinguishable. I try mm-hmm. not like, so when I turn on the camera and we're having a conversation, I try to not differentiate between what is recorded, what's not, what is social media, what's real life.
Yeah.
It's probably not a great thing. Sometimes, you know, like in terms of mental health, sometimes I do need to just turn it off.
Yeah.
But, I really do try to make it like it is an extension of real life. You know, it is a reality. Like, it's mm-hmm. not real because it's digital, right?
Yeah.
Look at the industry that we work in, right? Just because it's a digital data doesn't mean that it's not what actually happened.
Right. But to appease to the masses.
Yeah. You follow Shay Rowbottom?
No.
She's a good content creator. That's a good example of, you know, she'll intentionally go after those divisive subjects and mm-hmm. state her opinion on them, because while on some aspect it will turn a lot of people away from you,
right,
it'll actually bring you closer to your tribe, right? So if like you're just in the middle, you're kind of just not really, you know, you're just kind of forgettable, I guess. But if you pick a stance and you're not afraid to, like, you know, share it, I think you'll find that people will gravitate to you a little bit more, you know?
Right. But there is a fine line between professional acquaintanceship and trying to establish close relationships with the large majority of people. You know, if we're just trying to do a business together, I don't need to share my beliefs on X, Y, or Z.
Hmm.
That's just my personal philosophy.
That's an interesting, yeah, I don't necessarily think about it always like that. Yeah, so, this is very different because, like, you know, you have a job and I quit my job, so I get to actually kind of dive deep into this. And
no, I get it.
Yeah. But also in the same sense, it could bite me in the ass because, you know, I shared one time, you know, smoking a joint, and there were people, you know, particularly in this industry, that, like, were not okay with that. Like, they just think that wasn't cool, but... you know, for me, it's like, well, you know, that's like something I do in my free time. It's legal in California. It's like, I didn't necessarily see a big deal with it, but right. You know, because like I said, I don't try to filter my online self through a filter, but obviously using this as an example, I do, because
yeah,
knowing that response, then I kind of changed what it, you know, I don't know, but I still think that I'm going to try to push the boundary. You know, I'm always challenging traditional thinking. That was mm-hmm. what my headline was for a long time.
Right.
And, you know, for the better or for worse, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, do you have any interesting things you want to talk about? Like an interesting story, interesting project, or difficult client?
I mean, there's always difficult clients.
Let's hear a story about a difficult client and how you navigated that situation.
All right, so I went over. I'm not. This is all going to be covered up.
Paraphrase.
Okay. Yeah,
that's cool.
I went over to a plant, in the northwest, and got there, and it was a Cygnet application, and every tab strip based HMI, and every tab that they clicked on, it took 5 minutes to load the screen.
Wow.
5 minutes. So they would click, go get a cup of coffee, and then come back and check out their data. And so I had just transferred off of a pipeline support program, and I was for SCADA support, and I was pretty fresh, you know, hadn't been to a plant in about 2 years. I did a few plants previously. And I got there, and so they said, you know, first thing that they say to me is, hey, welcome, hey, fix this, you know, like, and I was there with this Oxford graduate, you know, engineer wow. guy that just said, well, it's not possible, right? And this is just like such a bragging story, but whatever, that's how it goes.
Well, I found that those people are like maybe really book smart, but maybe yeah. not so, they have yeah. no theory, or they have no practice, like.
Yeah, or being able to conceptualize the computer science behind it, yeah. Mm. And so what I ended up doing was I took all of the screens and I put them in layers in the back end of the application. And what I ended up doing was basically preloading all of the data, right? And so when it loaded up, it took about 10 minutes to load up the whole application, then everything was instantaneous. And they were, so I remember getting to that plant and them stuffing me in a corner in a chair while they discussed their upcoming plant operations and SCADA upgrades. And then I remember 4 hours later, me sitting at the middle of the table right screens. In front of, and people just surrounding me.
You were like God to them.
Well, no, I was just a little punk 25-year-old kid at the time,
right.
And they
solved their biggest problem that they didn't think yeah. was possible.
Yeah, and then, you know, for the most part, they just kind of, you know, being young in this industry as an integrator and going up to these you know, giants of industry and
seasoned yeah, veterans.
Just it's can be intimidating, but at the point in time, you know, you're just like you're not seeing the full picture of yeah. programming and
so
software.
So you didn't really fix the problem, you just worked your way around it. So you right. loaded all the screens and you just had them in layers, and then yeah. you just brought whichever one visible to the front.
Right.
And they were looking at this problem from a kind of maybe a closed mindset, and you, here you are fresh in the industry, you bring mm-hmm. that fresh perspective.
Yeah.
And you just...
So I got confronted about it later on because I was told that I broke Cygnet standards at the time. Because they didn't want pre-cache data. And so I spent about 6 months arguing on and off with the client. And
what was the reason why they didn't want pre-cache data?
Because it was outside of Cygnet standards at the time.
Oh.
Yeah, they didn't suggest that in their standards. A few years later, there's a new application that came out called Cygnet for Production.
And they used your idea.
They had pre-cache data, pre-cache screens.
So what are some other platforms that you work with, like Wonderware,
Ignition? Oh, I've worked with everything. You pretty much name it. I've worked with it. ClearSkate, Ignition, Iconics did that for a while, Wonderware Orchestra, Signet, iFix, Telvent, some of the production softwares, did FlowCal for a little bit, measurement, databases. I've been programming since I was 12, so I pretty much name it and I pretty much do it.
WinCC7 or WinCCOA?
No, haven't done those.
Okay.
So, not name it.
Just a second. Yeah, no, I've worked with those two, but not some of those other ones.
Yeah, I've heard of it, but I'm not going to say that I've worked with it. I haven't worked with it.
What do you think is the main difference between all these platforms?
I think every one of them was just pursued at their time of importance. For instance, Delta V was really great at being a Windows-based HMI and distributed control system at points when it was needed during the 2000 realm and late 90s and early into the 2000s. But as web technology evolved, to go to the other extreme, and web packages involved in Java evolved.
The era of Ignition.
Ignition has come.
Factory Studio.
Right. But there are still some things that should be pursued that are missing because of the dependency on pipelines and FIMSA and how they pursue those kind of production level data.
Yeah.
That is slightly different. So it's evolving technology just like anything else. It just goes a little bit slower.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we've seen the end of the Ignition era, or is Ignition continuing to grow stronger, especially with 8? Or like, do you think there's going to be another platform that kind of comes in from, you know, ground up and kind of, you know, is the new Ignition, so to speak? Or
are you saying Ignition is like Google? Are you just going to monopolize the
No, I'm not saying Ignition's like Google. I'm just saying I'd say that, you know, they did a great job with 8. I think 8 was a little bit overdue, but you know, had they not released 8, they, you know, I think they had lost that kind of point of differentiation. I think some of the other platforms kind of had a chance to kind of catch up.
Yeah.
Still a great platform, but it wasn't like Ignition today. I don't think is as strong as Ignition like in 2013, 14.
Right. Right.
Are you seeing that too, or?
So, to answer,
I know that, you guys are Premier Integrator and stuff like that too now. So
yeah. Well, to answer that that question, you have to consider like the evolution of different HMIs. For instance, did you know like in 2001, Signet was like $13,000?
No, what is it now?
A lot.
Okay, so that's cheap for
right.
what it is now.
So they cornered their market, and then they built it up, right?
Mm, okay.
And I just. For Ignition, I think that they have an opportunity here, but I hope that they do not build it up.
Hmm. Yeah, the prices have slowly gone up over the last, you know, each year a little bit. So it's still pretty affordable. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess I'm just thinking of if there's that new. I think perspective is what they try to, you know, they try to build perspective from the ground up. So maybe that's it, or maybe there's something else. I don't know.
Well, mobile applications definitely are the way to go. You got to tread lightly with mobile applications because mobile phones and the differentiation between the operating systems and how they all function is a very timid beast that needs to be handled very lightly. And I think that, yeah, perspective is going to be great, but it needs time to evolve more, in my opinion.
Where do you see the perspective working well versus just having like a React native application, like your own web application? And
like a prepackaged solution?
So prepackaged versus kind of custom coding where, you know, you're looking at, you know, I guess React is like a framework built in JavaScript, or there's a, you know, many different JavaScript frameworks.
Like Angular, Node.
Yeah, but there's also a lot more developers that work on those, but they maybe not have controls and automation experience. And then on the other side, you have electricians that want to maybe start dabbling in programming. So like Ignition is really good, whereas maybe they're not ready to write their own React server.
Right.
Where do you see one working better versus the other?
So Ignition's pursuit, Inductive Automation's pursuit of being a base platform to be expanded on is really, really difficult to do with mobile environments. Mm-hmm. So if there should be some pursuit in either other third parties that provide breadcrumbs, if you will, along the way to give you to a mobile solution that is more centered towards where you want to develop. But I can understand, you know, they don't want to include a lot of those kind of finite details because they are trying to be so...
A lower barrier to entry.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't think about it like that. Because if you were, let's say, just opening up, you downloaded Node.js and you wanted to start writing a JavaScript application,
right?
You got to install a library for OPC communication.
Right.
You got to install a library for MQTT and throw a mosquito broker. And by the time you've gotten this thing going, you've spent all this time getting it going, and or maybe, you know, there's someone that's already done that and you kind of download it, get started. But
yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's just really easy to just drag something on the screen from Ignition.
It is. Yeah.
Or pull up the Inductive University video. And so they've kind of created this nice environment that you can play in, but then it's also, you kind of have to stay within some of the bounds of that environment,
right?
You're not getting access to the underlying code.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is kind of a trade-off that I've, you know, it's interesting to talk about.
Yeah, I think that the critical thing that they're going to have trouble with in the future is getting to almost a Unity kind of platform where the complexity behind it, between all of the available features that could be developed on, are just so insurmountable for someone with such a minimal knowledge base that it's almost overwhelming at first.
So they've kind of lost what... So say that again?
So to put it in a more simpler fashion, it's too complex for someone that doesn't know anything to come in and try to figure out and develop their own.
Because learning Ignition is a very niche skill.
It is.
It takes it takes a good amount of time to get very proficient with it.
Yeah.
You know, you can get up and going in a day or two, but to really get good with Ignition, to know all the nuances, you need to work with it like at least a year. And
yeah,
you know, you need to go to the ICC, talk to other developers, see many different projects,
explore the forum. Yeah,
so
it depends.
But then
too.
But then you've kind of cornered yourself into like only learning Ignition. Whereas if you learned if you learned a language that is more computer science based, it's kind of more broadly applicable. And the reason why I'm talking about these is because IT and OT are combining. So some of those worlds might start to overlap. And
Well, I mean, and you know, computer science is literally just starting to split up into different avenues of types, right? And my degree's in computer
science, and
all the different kind of how it's all interconnected there. And that's really important because you have a lot of different a lot of baseline languages that could be applied now. For instance, you know, everybody thinks C++ and C and how it all started, right? And the compilers behind it. And that was one of the first languages I know. I started to learn when I was like 13. And
with C++?
Yeah. And I had the Borland C++ compiler, which was terrible if anybody knew that. But anyway, you know, once you thoroughly know one language, the rest of them, just all the patterns come together.
Right.
It's the same way with HMIs. Like, it didn't take me a year to learn Ignition and all of its little quirks and specialties. It took me a few months because I'd worked with so many HMIs before. It was just pointing my knowledge on a different HMI to a different avenue.
Yeah.
So it's just evolving knowledge on top of what you've already established. That initial learning period is the practice that needs to occur. I still program for as a hobby at home.
And being that type of person that's continuously learning and learns quickly.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah. So that's how you were born to be a system integrator.
I suppose so. I love learning and I love new challenges. Mm-hmm. Not everybody's like that.
It was interesting. You know. Michael was talking about his IoT smart home.
Yeah.
And he's actually using MQTT.
Yeah.
And has his own, Node-RED server. And I'm like, you know, this is the the classical, I said nerd, I should, maybe that's a little derogatory. I'm a nerd too, you know, but like, now geek is probably more derogatory than nerd. I think nerd is a compliment.
I don't think either of them are insults. Yeah. I think it's just, that's
fine. We like playing with the technology.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a difference between that and someone who's just doing this for a paycheck, you know, and mm-hmm. then they go home and they're not really
right
in love with it. I think they won't be as successful.
Yeah.
No, so if they're sitting here listening to this podcast, you're probably in this field, you love it, or if you're not, then you need to get into it. You maybe need to call CSE Icon, see if they're a place that you might want to work.
Well, it's about what you're passionate about, right? It's about what gets you up and gets you excited in the morning, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, every job has stresses, and every job has problems, and every job, you know, they're going to come around.
There's always going to be stuff you don't want to do.
Always, you know? But it's about, you know, that kind of extra little push that gets you going, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whenever I talk about finding developers and integrators that I really like working with, I always see them as, okay, here's the task at hand, and then there's this little extra little part which says, hey, you know what, this would be pretty cool.
Extra
and
credit.
Then just go after that for no reason, no justification. They're not breaking or repairing anything. They just think, hey, this would be really cool to make. And they go for it.
Yeah.
And even if it gets thrown away, the very fact that they did it, as it shows that they have passion over what they do and what they want to pursue in that kind of way.
So, I had a really good question. I think I was going to ask how do you find people, or no, something a little bit better. Do you have any questions for me while I think about this?
Have you noticed differences in integration personalities around the nation as you've traveled so far?
I think it's funny. I was saying to Albert, I was like, oh, you know, unless I saw that sign, there'd be no way we would know we're in Louisiana right now.
Yeah.
Like, completely joking, because the people there are just, you know, every city has its own nuances about it, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't talk to any system integrators in New Jersey, but I'm sure if I did, they would, you know, probably all be Jewish, you
right.
know.
Right.
Like, not trying to be culturally insensitive or anything. Like, we went to this LinkedIn Global, which I was part of the influencer roundtable, and
mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the people there were Jewish, and I guess that's, you know, based on the culture there.
Yeah.
Very nice people, you know, but that was just something I noticed, right? So,
right.
I think that kind of comes down to the geography. I think, you know, obviously the company has a lot to do with it too, right?
Yeah.
So if a company is thinking of a certain way, they're going to attract and retain talent that kind of has a similar values.
Right.
So, you know, but I think what the similarities are, in a continuous learning, you know, people that tinker with this stuff,
yeah.
you know, at home in their spare time. Being able to, like, you know, they don't want to necessarily work on one project forever and ever. They like being able to work on different projects,
right.
which integration is a good place to be able to do that. What about you? What have you noticed in your career?
I've worked with, this is my fifth integration group. I just started a control systems group first, and then I went to just did SCADA support for a pipeline. I was just more of a staffing agency kind of set up, and Wipro, and then another contract, and then this company. I mean, it's not so much about the integration groups. I find that it's more about the clients and what those integration groups, how they work with those clients and moving forward there. So it's the clients primarily and the office culture behind it. Yeah.
Okay. What do you think, if you had to boil it down, what makes a successful system integrator?
Tenacity, pursuing extra, you know, information, trying to dig into the problem, dig into the solution, being willing to go the extra mile even if you don't have to. Communication. You got to talk.
Yeah.
You got to talk as much as possible and keep up with it. And that can be tough at times because, you know, what will happen is sometimes the software will bite you, and then they'll bite the client, and you get blamed for the bites, even though it's not anything to do with you. Yeah. And being able to have some thick skin there is definitely part of it.
Yeah, that's true, huh?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's kind of thankless too, huh? Have you ever noticed that?
I don't. When I was younger in the business, yeah, because it was like I would be proud of something and I would be excited about showing it to them.
And they would have already expected it to work that way.
They'd be like, all right, this is sufficient, or we didn't want to pursue this direction. Could you just toss that out? And that was more about getting appreciation
from others,
from other people,
rather than intrinsically.
So what I've ended up doing for myself personally is seeking inward resolve rather than seeking outward resolve, and just doing my best every day.
That's a great tip for life, man.
Yeah.
We should just end it right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. If there's anything else, then.
Yeah. Not really.
Appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
It's been fun chatting with you. And
absolutely.
Thank you again for sponsoring the road trip, man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's a huge help, man. Really.